Hi, this is Mary Elizabeth Bradford, and the topic of this call is LinkedIn for executives and how to leverage this platform to help you with thought leadership, find jobs, connect with recruiters, all very passively and without tipping anybody off that you're looking or interested in moving. So this call is going to be separated out into three parts. The first is how to use it to do general networking. The second part is some tips to using it for thought leadership. And the third is how to fill out your actual profile. So first of all, LinkedIn. So it used to be many years ago when I first started promoting, you know, LinkedIn and helping my clients understand how to utilize it, that, you know, the ethos that I approached it with was, you know, we don't want to wave a white flag and let people know that you're looking. And so, you know, the jobs feature is sort of, you know, not even something we bother with, and things of this nature. But I have since changed my tune, because not that the premise of that thought process has changed, but that we can use LinkedIn now for, it's more of algorithm triggering. So when we let recruiters know, you know, that we want to connect with them, or we let companies know that we're following them or turn on the jobs alert, that triggers the algorithm. It's also something that only you can see. So when you turn these things on, it's apparent to you, but it's not apparent to your company or anybody else that's looking at your profile. So that is pretty powerful. So, you know, ethically, I'm not sure how I feel about, you know, that, you know, algorithms and triggering algorithms, but professionally, it is my responsibility to share with my clients how to use that to further their success, and specifically speaking, how to pull opportunities to them through LinkedIn as a platform. So think about it like LinkedIn is a network, but really it's technically a gigantic database. So here you have this database that you can tap into, and the first question you have to ask yourself is, who do I want to tap into? Who do I want to be connected with that is in my sphere of expertise, influence, that I want to get to know better, that I want to be associated with? So for me, for example, I use LinkedIn to connect with other C-suite executives, board members, operating partners, private equity firm team members, people that, you know, are sort of play in my playground, that I can then offer to my clients as second degree connections that they connect with me. So it's very important to me to have a very strong network of C-suite connections. So I think, and I'll show you a little bit later, there's a place to look at it under your network, but you can see what your first and second degree connections are. I think my second degree connections for C-suite executives is 350,000, and I've got 400,000 board members and over 50,000 recruiters. So the better I do at creating those connections, the more I can turn around and offer it to you as my client, saying, I have these connections. If you connect with me, these connections will then be in your third degree network, which means that when you conduct searches on LinkedIn, you have access to my connections. So that's sort of how it works, almost like a, I don't know, multi-level marketing type of thing that is legitimate. And so we want to capitalize on this by connecting, first of all, thinking about connecting with the people that you would be interested in getting to know. So if you're a construction executive, you know, you might want to connect with other construction companies and engineering companies and architectural companies and developers and city planners and hospital owners, if you do hospital construction, you know. So anyway, it's like, think about it like that. Who do you want to be connected to? And right now would be a good time to pause this and create a short list of 5 or 10 types of niches that you would want to be connected to. Okay. So once you've connected to these people, and again, you know, when you going back to the analogy of commercial contractors, you would want to be connected to hospital owners because those are the type of projects that you want, and you want to be on those people's radar. You want to be connected to other contractors because maybe they have other executives that at some point you might want to invite to be on your team. Is a nice way to put it. Maybe you want to be connected to engineers and architects to see how they're managing their, what kind of projects they're working on, if they might be good for you or not, to strengthen those relationships. So, and to increase your overall networking, because once you're connected to them, again, you're connected to everybody that they know too. So this is how it works. So just let that seep in. How powerful this actually is. So, if you want to be involved in private equity-backed manufacturing companies, we would want to connect with PE companies that have manufacturers in their portfolio. If you're a technology executive and you want to be connected to anything to do with AI or machine learning, then you know the keywords. It's really easy in the LinkedIn search terms to search for those things under jobs, under people, under companies, and see what comes up, and then reach out and invite them to connect. So this is a good exercise you could do, you know, 15 minutes a week. Make it part of your schedule to reach out and send short invitations to people on LinkedIn. If you are a superstar executive that has a team of admin, then tell them to listen to this call and get the emails approved or the messages approved and put it on them to do for you, log into your LinkedIn profile and do for you once a week. And this is going to really pay off. So if you have a free LinkedIn account, this is something that I think you can get 100 invites accepted per week. And I don't know what it, nobody really knows because LinkedIn doesn't tell us. But if you have a paid account, then the amount of invites that can be accepted per week into your network is a little higher. So, but the message that you can send out, and I've got a tip sheet associated with this call in in this section for LinkedIn. But the messages sound something like this, you know, "Hi, Sarah. My name is Mary Elizabeth Bradford, and I'm actively expanding my geographical connections. I'd like to invite you to join my network on LinkedIn." Or, "Hey, Sam, as Mary Elizabeth Bradford, I'm actively expanding my CFO-related connections. I run a top executive resume writing company, and I'd love to share my network with you. I'd love to invite you to join my network on LinkedIn." Short, sweet, to the point, just, you know, why you're connecting with them. Other excuses you can use to connect with someone is, "Hey, John, congratulations on winning the AIR award for 2019. I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn here, or I admire your company." So, and if it's a recruiter, "Hey, Mike, it's Mary Elizabeth Bradford. You recruit for my positions. I'm trying to actively expand my network, create a good, healthy, you know, group of networking contacts, and I'd like to invite you to join my network on LinkedIn." So all of these reasons are wonderful. Now, it used to be, and I never bought into this because I understood early on what LinkedIn actually was and how my clients could use it. But for many years, they were saying, "Oh, don't connect with people you don't know." Well, if you've noticed lately, LinkedIn doesn't do that anymore because people wised up to the fact that it's ridiculous. It's not Facebook, and it's not that, you know, the object is to be able to leverage this for marketing purposes, your self-marketing and establishment or reinforcement of thought leadership. And so that's how executives today are using it. So less and less now I run into people that say, "Oh, I don't accept invitations from people I don't know." I mean, there's always going to be pockets of that for different reasons. Maybe someone's famous, you know, they don't accept invites anymore. You can just follow them. And if that's the option, go ahead and do that because that still counts. In terms of, again, thinking about the algorithm, But for the most part, if it makes logical sense while you're reaching out one CEO to another CEO, one established contact to another established contact, then chances are if they check their LinkedIn messages, they're going to accept your connection. So I do this on a pretty regular basis, and with my custom messages, I get 85% acceptance of my invites, which is really strong. And I've never had a problem. I've never been dinged by LinkedIn saying, you know, I'm spamming people, I'm sending too much. So nothing has happened that I feel like I need to alert my my clients and tell them, hey, you know, out of all the things, don't do this. If that happens, because we're always trying and testing new things, and then certainly I'll update this call and let everybody know, but as now, it's pretty loose. So that is how and why to connect with companies on LinkedIn. You can use that so that, and remember too, just to give you kind of another angle on this, when you find and reach out and invite people to connect with you on LinkedIn, and they do, then all of a sudden you're a blip on their radar. Whereas before, let's say, for example, someone is a COO, and they're trying to find a VP of operations, and they just decided to look on their LinkedIn to search to see who's in their networking contacts, then if you are not connected to that company or that individual in their first, second, or third degree network, when he or she uses it to search for someone like you, you will not come up in their search results. So it's like you don't exist. However, if you are connected with them, then you will come up in their search results. Now, the other thing that can affect, and we're going to talk about this in a little while, their search, where you come up in the search results, is the way that you structure your actual profile, the keywords and such, and we're going to go over that. But just the connection alone, it's sort of 50-50. It's where you rank and how you rank and how you present on LinkedIn is a combination of whom you're connected to for second or third degree or not in their network at all and what you have on your LinkedIn profile. So if they're searching for CFOs plus, you know, MBAs and you didn't put your MBA in the tagline of your LinkedIn profile because you're a million-dollar, you know, CFO and you work for a, you know, $50 billion company, you don't think that's important anymore, then, well, guess what? It's not going to come up. You're not going to rank as high or at all in that individual search result. So there's certain things that we have to put in certain places in order to trigger those algorithms. So anyway, hope that makes sense. So exercise number two would be spend 15 minutes or give it to one of your assistants or team members to invite a certain amount of people into your LinkedIn profile each and every week that you think are going to strengthen your profile. So if you are a hospital executive and you need to be connected with medical device companies, pharmaceutical companies, other big hospital systems, like anybody in your world, then that's the list you want to create. That's what you want to be searching for on LinkedIn. And using LinkedIn as a search, you know, kind of like Google, it's pretty fascinating how that works, and it works pretty well. So it's not difficult to find people to reach out and connect to. And one last thought on this is that it doesn't so much matter whom you connect with in the company in terms of their ranking, just that you're connected. Once you're connected to one, generally speaking, you're connected to everybody in that company. So, you know, if you want to be connected with the president of Oracle, great, but you could also be connected to the VP of HR or, you know, a mid-manager or even an intern, and you're still going to get benefit from being connected to somebody that works at Oracle. Now, LinkedIn changes the rules all the time. This is, you know, I try to take courses every year so I can keep up on all the different evolutions in it and changes, but this, last I checked, was the general rule. Okay, so moving on, connect with me, and I gave you a tip sheet on this call too that is sort of like a paint by numbers. It's got, you know, screenshots showing where and how to do things, but one of the first things you want to do is connect with me, because again, I have over 50,000 executive recruiter connections in my first and second degree. I've got about of 4,000, I'm sorry, 40,000 VC, that's a typo, I just found a typo on my tip sheet, 40,000 VC and private equity connections. I have about 500,000 board members and I think it was 350,000 C-level executives. So when you connect with me, you get access to all of those people. So in LinkedIn search box, when you're in your profile, you log in, you just search for my name, Mary Elizabeth Bradford, because that's also the name of my company. I'm going to come right out up, and then you just quick send me an invitation. LinkedIn will prompt you how to do that. Okay, so let's spend a little bit more time talking about recruiters. Again, getting back to this whole algorithm, you know, when I was a recruiter, it used to be that, you know, the premise was the same. So I was a construction and REIT, you know, I did a lot of commercial developers and arms of developers like Duke Energy had a development arm and I recruited for them. So if I was still a recruiter, I would want to go out and be connected to anyone that has to do with construction, engineering, architecture, REITs, developers, city planners, city officials, state officials, you know, and the like, and so on. And then I might have old schooled it and gone down to the library. That's really dating me, but you know, it really wasn't too long ago that all that happened. You know, I'm looking for the same things. It was just not electronic. And then finally, when it was, I would do it electronically, but we're looking for lists. We're looking for databases so that I could reach out and connect with those people and do my recruiting. Well, today that has evolved where most recruiting, and I've gotten different figures, so I'm just going to throw out a loose figure here. I'm going to say between 60 and 90% of internal and external recruiters are using LinkedIn in some form or fashion to source candidates, and 90% plus of those recruiters are sourcing for Fortune 1000 companies. That's pretty incredible. And so, you know, LinkedIn has become like this big database, you know, for most recruiters. Now there are two plans that LinkedIn has to monetize this, obviously, so they figured out a way to do this. They have two plans they offer recruiting firms. One is called LinkedIn Corporate Recruiter, and one's called LinkedIn Recruiter Lite. LinkedIn Recruiter Lite is the one that most recruiters use, I think, and I have checked on this. This is the feedback. This is anecdotal, but the feedback I've gotten, most recruiters are on LinkedIn Recruiter Lite, cost about $1,200 a year, and those recruiters can use their LinkedIn as a database, and they can see up to their third-level connections and reach out to people whenever they wish. LinkedIn Corporate Recruiter is $10,000 a year per user, not per company, per user, which is why you have a significantly less people using that, and that unlocks it and gives direct access to LinkedIn's entire database. So, again, going back to that, most recruiters are running LinkedIn Recruiter Lite. They can only see their third-level connections. They have an interest in connecting with you, because if you become part of their third-level connections, then all of a sudden you're in their gigantic database, right, which is called LinkedIn. So if you are in their industry or you're in their niche that they place executives for, then they're going to be pretty interested in hopefully connecting with you. So in their industry means healthcare, supply chain management, logistics. Like, recruiters have all kinds of different niches. You know, they can be the CFO recruiter. They can be the startup tech company recruiter. They can be the recruiter that finds and places chief digital officers, or they can be the recruiter that only works in Atlanta, Georgia. That's a little bit more rare, but they're generally not geographically specific, because that doesn't make as much sense. But typically it's industry, and then sort of secondarily, they may be like niche, like CDO, something a little bit unusual, chief rewards officer. I only do rewards officers, kind of those unusual titles or something very niche-y that maybe you have to specialize in. You know, you notice recruiters usually come from the company side, and it's typically because they're the aerospace experts, and now they place executives in aerospace, you know, or they're the marketing expert, and they only place marketing executives for consumer goods. So you get where I'm going with this. So you want to find, the object of the game is finding the recruiters that are in your industry or niche. And you can do that with very quick LinkedIn searches, and then invite them to join your network on LinkedIn. Now, there's a couple other ways that you can sort of spin this or play this out, and that is I have a list of recruiters that I give you that are just retained majors, the Corn Fairies, the Battaglias. Those guys, I have the list. I give it to you. You can follow them. That does help. It, again, triggers the algorithms. And I also have a list of individual recruiters in those majors that you can connect with. So if you're a top executive and you say, hey, I want to deal with the Corn Fairies of the world, I've got your list. If you are a specialist and you say, hey, I'm a CFO for aerospace, you know, then LinkedIn search, if you search in LinkedIn, it should be pretty good at coming up with the results for that. So again, you would put in something like aerospace, and if you were going to do a Boolean search, you could do and, capital A-N-D, recruiters or headhunters, and see what comes up. Let's see, what else? So that is, you want to connect with them even if you're not looking for a job, because it's all timing with recruiters. Just a little side note on recruiters. You know, I can have some people ask me, well, do you have a, you know, an exclusive network of recruiters that are your personal friends that you're gonna hook me up with? Doesn't really work like that, because, you know, I can know John at Corn Fairy for 20 years and he may love my work and we may think we're both super people. But if I've got Mike, the CEO from, some Fortune 1000 company, and I give him Mike and say, hey, I've got a great candidate. Can you, you know, is there anything you've got for him? And he doesn't have anything. You know, his hands are tied. It's all timing. He can only help me if he's got something on his desk or, you know, an order for a search that matches with, you know, you as the candidate. So to me, the logical thing to do is to set it up where you're connected to all of them. And if the timing is right, then they can pitch you things sort of intermittently as the years go by. And when you're ready, you're ready. And if you're not, you're not. You know, maybe you can help them. Maybe you like the way they recruit and you want them to do a search for your company. I mean, that's how these things work. But at the end of the day, whether they do searches for your company or not, they're still going to be interested in you, but only if you match the job role that they have in their hand at that moment in time. So it is all timing with the recruiters. There's no rejection. It is not personal. They don't really care. They only care to talk to you or me or anybody else if you've got something that is a match, and then they chase it, you know, and try to make the deal happen. So if you've ever wondered why recruiters aren't talking to you, it's not because, you know, chances are it's not because there's something in your qualifications that, you know, is bad or wrong. It's simply that they don't have the open search that fits you at a moment in time. And that is why it is really wise, no matter who you are or where you're at on the totem pole, famous, more obscure, somewhere in between, to reach out and connect with as many recruiters as possible so that you can leverage their open jobs as they sort of come up. You know, that's why sometimes too, and certainly it's great to network. It's okay to help a recruiter, but if you help a recruiter with 5 searches over 5 years and you throw them 5 big bones and then you go, okay, my turn, and they don't have anything for you, and you go, well, dude, I was there for you when you needed me. That's why these things happen. It's because it's all predicated on timing. So I hope that makes sense. So find recruiters as you can and follow their companies and connect with the ones that are in your industry or niche. So a word on privacy, and I did include this in the tip sheet, so I won't, you know, give it too much time, but only recruiters that use LinkedIn Recruiter's products can have access to your preference and career interests. And in order to protect your privacy, the recruiters that work at your company cannot see your career interests that you share. Don't ask me how they do that. It's really fabulous. Well, they say they compare a unique company ID to the ID of the recruiter, and so if they use Recruiter Lite or LinkedIn Recruiter, they can't see your profile. So there's things that you can do in your security settings that I'll briefly cover too. That as we continue on here, to shield yourself from your company and the recruiters that work for your company, internal or external. Okay, so let's just get into jobs. What about jobs? It's not so much letting recruiters know or letting companies know that you're interested. Again, it's triggering those algorithms that then alert the recruiters that you're potentially interested. And the reason that this is important to do is because it's kind of like, I don't know how else to say it. To me, it just reminds me of gaming the system. If we know how to game the system, we can get better results. So if you apply to a job on a job board, you know, 3 to 5% is the general return on your investment of time, which means that's a pretty low number. But if you look at this more of a long tail and you just connect and follow with people and follow the companies that you're potentially interested in, it's a pretty quick and easy way to reverse engineer your job search to let them passively know that, hey, I got my eye on you electronically, my AI, and I've been sitting at my desk too long. And then sort of the long tail that can create the general connections and the, you know, and sort of the back and forth. So one of the things that you can do, so right now, exercise number three would be write a list of, and that you've kind of already done this, but let's say, do you have a list of companies that, you know, would be sort of like your dream companies to work for? If you do, pause this and spend, you know, just a minute writing them down now. And that could be just, you know, 10 to 20 companies that you would consider like superstar companies, you know, like sometimes I'll hear from my tech executives, you know, I would love to work for Google or Apple, I don't know, or Uber, you know, one of those, or Facebook, you know, they have a list of companies that would be, for whatever reason, exciting to them. So pause this now and write those down. Okay, so what you can do with those companies now that you've got them is type their name into the LinkedIn search box. When the company comes up, I want you to follow those companies. That's the first thing you want to do is follow them. Now that you are following them, you will see their feeds in your feed, what they're posting. You can like and comment on their feed. Now, obviously, you want to comment in a positive way. Better or worse, I have a general rule, have very rarely put out any negative things that can be traced back to me on social media. I just don't want to be in the camp where I'm bawling people out or I'm saying something negative and hurting the reputation of their company. Unless I feel justifiably like I have to warn other people of that, I stay away from all of that. So, you know, if we can be positive, we can be motivating. It's a chance to be, you know, to give a reflection of the kind of leader, you know, leadership that we have by the way that we comment, the way that we encourage, the things that we promote. So just remember, anything that you like or connect with, like, you know, it's going to be out there and there's going to be a, you know, there's going to be a marker, there's going to be a record of it. So just be thinking of that and use care when you think about how you want to put yourself out there and the kind of things that you want to get behind and the words that you want to say. So I filter everything through business. I don't do anything personal that is online. I mean, I just personally don't. A lot of my clients don't either. But I do leverage LinkedIn and other different platforms for business. But I am very careful about the things that I will sort of get behind and promote. And if there's something that I'm not sure of, I don't make a comment on anything or promote it until you know, sort of the smoke clears and I understand how I really feel about it. So I think it's really a great idea to be thoughtful in terms of the types of things. You know, if everybody's, I don't know, talking about diversity and you're like, you know, I'm just really trying to wrap my arms around this whole idea of what that means and how people are using that word. Well, you know, we might want to just hold off for another few months until we really feel like we have a handle, we're comfortable with what that means and what the implications are, you know, and then decide. So if it's something that's a gray area for me, or I say it's not important, or another filter that I'll use for myself is, if I react or respond to this, what good will come of it? And that's basically it. What good will come of it? What impact can I make? And is it worth it? And I do this with everything. I do this with my team too. Maybe somebody does something that is not the way that I do things. Before I will react, I'll take a night. If it's important, I'll just say, if I say something, what could I say that will make a difference, you know, that will help in a positive way? And how could I say it? And unfortunately, a lot of times I can't come up with something good. So sometimes it has to happen a couple more times before I'll step up because I know it's going to be uncomfortable and I know that I have to take the bitter with the sweet if I say something. You know, other times I'll come up with a better answer just because I thought it through a little bit. So you just have to decide on this, but I think thoughtful deliberation on anything we post online socially is probably a really good idea. And then there's also things, I don't know, I'm sort of getting off on a tangent here, but there's also things that I believe in. Like, I believe in the family. And so if somebody makes mention of something that I don't believe in, then, you know, I may jump in and say, well, I think XYZ, you know, is really beautiful. I think that's noble. I think that's very virtuous what he said. I may see something like that because I feel like that is my duty to support something. So those are my conditions that I sort of, my markers and my conditions that I use for determining what I'm going to say how I'm going to say it. You'll have your own. I'm just sort of throwing this out there in that maybe it might be helpful to you as you're trying to make your own determinations. Okay, so back to favorite companies. Now you can like and comment on that company's post. You can see what they're posting. You can decide if you like it. You can let them know that, you know, every time that you like or comment on something, it sort of puts you top of mind with those companies. And sometimes it just ends up happening, quote unquote, organically, that all of a sudden then someone from that company will reach out to you with something, you know, whether it is an inquiry for something or a job, but that's how these things happen now. And again, it's all triggered by algorithms. So right now, that is how we, I'm going to say, leverage LinkedIn. And then also, you can use the jobs feature and jobs function to start connecting with, I believe you can do it for recruiters, and you can also do it for companies where you can turn the jobs function on. And again, when you do this, no one else can see but you and said company, but it's not really overly exposing you. It's just saying you're interested in seeing what positions they have. You could be doing market analysis for all anybody knows. But if you do this, then you can trigger the algorithm and let them know that you're interested. And if you connect with, I think it's three people on LinkedIn that is associated with the companies that you're following, it automatically triggers, it puts them on some kind of a high alert when it comes to the premium jobs feature. Premium job feature isn't something that we sign up for. It's something that gets triggered when you're connected, when the jobs feature is turned on and you're connected with a few people at that particular company. Okay, so that is pretty much my quick overview on networking. And then let me see here what else I want to go through. Let's talk about thought leadership on LinkedIn. The other thing that you can do hand in hand with LinkedIn is establish yourself as a thought leader. So a lot of my clients are using their resumes and their bios and their LinkedIn profiles now as more of a career portfolio presentation. So used to be resumes 100% for jobs, not true anymore. Seems like more and more, especially as things sort of go online, so we have our offline and our online marketing materials or collateral. People are using their sort of branding of who they are as an executive to sort of form and reinforce their branding. So, for example, about 8 years ago, I rebranded my entire website for CEO Resume Writer. You know, at first, before that, it was sort of like come one, come all. You know, we have the entry-level resumes, we have the mid-level resumes, we have the executive-level resumes. And that worked fine for a number of years until I realized that 85% of my clients were executives, and those were the people that I preferred to work with anyway to do those types of projects. So it just, you know, I hired a business coach and who I've worked off and on with for many, many years. And we were talking about this, and we both agreed it would be a great idea to just rebrand and just do 100% executives. And when you have a niche like that that's well-defined, it's so much easier, just like my clients, to, you know, wrap our arms around a marketing strategy to attract those people to us. So I rebranded, and oh my goodness, the difference in the discovery calls I was having with potential clients and the type of traction that I was getting and the thought leadership I established. Once I stepped into the role that I was already doing anyway, I just wasn't branding myself properly. Everything transformed for me. Everything became better, easier, much more successful. And that was a big epiphany for me, and that was sort of the last puzzle piece for me to have clicked into place to understand how resumes and LinkedIn profiles work for my clients as well, because just like me, it happens like this just for you as well. So I really fully realized at that moment the power of that initial perception that people have of us and how much power and control we have over creating that perception. So first things first, when talking about this, I cannot emphasize enough that your resume and your LinkedIn profile, in terms of the branding, the content you're putting out there, doesn't have to be a duplicate. It shouldn't. But it has to match, has to be in, there has to be continuity there. So the resume has to be in concert with the profile. The profile has to be in concert with the resume. Even if you have to fudge a little bit, like let's say, for example, you're going from a VP of IT to a CIO position, and so your resume is very heavily written as a CIO because you want the initial perception of your audience to understand your value in that new role that you want to step up into, which is very easy to do. But you have to tone it down a little bit on the LinkedIn profile because you don't want to tip your current company off. It's possible. And we can still do that and create an alignment for you without tipping off your company and but also still having everything be in concert in terms of the overall message and the branding. So it is possible. There are certain types of transitions and shifts that are a little bit harder, but it can still be done. We can still tie in the resume with the LinkedIn profile. And the reason it's so important is because I hear it often that recruiters will discard a resume, or they will discard a candidate or lose faith and trust in a candidate because their LinkedIn profile doesn't read like their resume. They'll just go, I just can't get a read on this person. I don't know. I feel uncomfortable. And then they sort of forget about them as a candidate. So we don't want to lose anybody's trust. We want there to be continuity. So thought leadership in terms of career portfolios, if you are looking towards advisory roles, consultancy type of work, keynote speaking engagements, thought leadership in a particular niche or an industry, board nominations, these things can be translated through LinkedIn and setting it up so it sets the stage for those conversations to happen. So if I say on my LinkedIn profile that I own a company that does resume rating for CEOs, that I am interested in board nominations, that I'm available for advisory roles and keynote speaking, that's the kind of stuff that's going to get sort of, you know, that I'm going to attract. So in essence, we can establish our thought leadership by what we say, the words that we use. Even if we haven't done it yet, we can say, you know, that we are open to board nominations. We are actively interested in partnerships for keynote speaking on the following three topics, or available for speaking on the following three hot topics. Boom, boom, boom. And again, it's taking a respectful, participation in helping your audience understand how to utilize your expertise. That's what good leaders do. They come at every situation, whether it's their team or whether it's partnerships, with a let me help you make good decisions moving forward by actively participating and making sure that the resume reads in a way that demonstrates and communicates the value points of your areas of expertise. Same with LinkedIn. So it's sort of a leader-mentor helping type of a ovation. So when we're thinking about what kind of messages that we want to put out there on LinkedIn, think about how you want people to know you and understand that it is your responsibility to share that with others. They cannot guess. They can't read our minds. Nobody knows all the areas that we want to focus on. And again, the other side of the spectrum is we don't need everything in the kitchen sink in our resume or our LinkedIn profile. It's our resume and our LinkedIn profile are not a place to dump all of each and everything that we've ever done that we've been good at. It is a sounding board for only those things that we care to do in the future, now and in the future. If you don't want to do something anymore, don't put it on your resume or your LinkedIn profile. If you're stepping out of one thing and stepping into another, it makes logical sense that we're going to emphasize the thing you want to step into and minimize the thing you're stepping out of. It's a little painful to let go of things, but in executive careers, we do it all the time. We're always letting go of things. We're delegating tasks. We're moving. We're evolving. And so it's that muscle that we're exercising when we're thinking about our marketing collateral. So that ties in very closely to thought leadership. What do you want people to know you for? So exercise number four, you can pause this call and write down five things that you want to attract on LinkedIn and that you'd like to be known for. Okay, so moving on, reinforcing thought leadership is can be also done through activity broadcasts. Your activity broadcast is what you're putting out there to the world. So I live in Burney, Texas. When I first moved here, it was a small town, 5,000, 7,000 people. Now it's tripled in size. We're going through a total metamorphosis, and I don't particularly like it, but still in all, it's not a big enough area that everybody's going to know it if I say it. So if I get published in the Burney Business Monthly magazine, I do not broadcast that on LinkedIn. However, if somebody from Time Magazine mentions me in one of their articles, or Harvard Business Review, or Forbes, or Wall Street Journal, I think you get where I'm going with this. The first thing I do is I put that stuff out on LinkedIn. Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for including me in your article, 10 Things CEOs Are Concerned About and such and such. And then I link to the article. So let's say there's something else that is really important, to my C-suite clients. Maybe it's fastest growing private equity portfolio areas. I might put that out on LinkedIn. Maybe it's 10 things CFOs need to know before they do blank, or how to get your first board position, or what it's like to interview for CEO roles, or I don't know, you know, any myriad of C-suite topics or anything economically that is would be very interesting to my top executive clients. Those are the type of things I want to filter through those activity broadcasts. So if you are looking to reinforce your thought leadership, be thinking about what you want to be associated with. So if you are a medical device executive and you work with 500 million to $1 billion medical device companies that are in growth mode that have to do with oncology, well, that's your world, and that's the kind of stuff that you want to be putting out there on your activity broadcast to reinforce your thought leadership in that particular area. So if you want, again, exercise number 5, pause and write down the areas that you want to be known as a thought leader in. So I'll give you a few other ideas on thought leadership. Maybe you want some speaking engagements. So you might promote an association that's related to your industry and something that's happening in terms of the topic of the keynote speakers. You might want to call that association director and find out if you can participate either by contributing to a blog or an article or a podcast or something to do with a conference that's coming up. And, you know, these types of things, you start out small and it has a massive snowball effect. So maybe you're wondering how I ever got published in the Wall Street Journal. I started out just the way I explained. I called Laura DiCarlo, the director for Career Directors International, which we have 4 associations in the careers industry. That's typically seen as the top one. They have the most stringent certifications, and they tend to have the most edgy, kind of to-the-moment type of topics, you know, that they share with their members. And I pitched her 3 ideas for articles. I said, I'm not a member yet, but are you ever looking for authors for topics? Because I can talk about how to tap into the hidden gem market. I can talk about this. I could talk about informational interviews. And she says, oh, my goodness, I would love that, you know. So here I am offering free help. So I wrote something on the hidden job market. It was a big hit. I kept writing for her. 6 months later, she said, hey, I threw your name in the hat for a business journal. They approached me with they needed a few experts on an article they're going to publish on resume writing. And so I got that. And I got a few of those, and then, you know, the next year I was approached and pitched some things and ended up getting in Forbes and Wall Street Journal, and there's been a whole bunch of them. So, but that's how it happened. It started out small, just me sort of taking one small step and just snowballed. And the great thing about speaking at presentations and getting published is it's the gift that keeps on giving. You do it once and you get the brownie button forever. So if you know, my general rule has always been as a thought leader in my industry, I have to, A, keep up on certain things. And, of course, the wheels turn a little bit slower for me because the C-suite level, things stay more evergreen. But I still in all have to learn. It's still dynamic and we have to be very agile. And number 2, I try to get at least 2 major publication sort of authorships per year. I try to get published twice a year. I don't do speaking engagements anymore because I'm just not that big on traveling right now as I've gotten more busy with other things, but I'm all about getting published. So because it takes a little time and effort, I do twice a year, and that's plenty to just keep adding those, you know, stickers to my website and saying published here, published there. And you can do the same exact thing. And it pays off. If you say, you can say this on LinkedIn, you know, you can say, hey, I was really, really thrilled to be quoted by the AMA this week on their topic of blank, and then you link to the article or link to the conference or link to the podcast, and that keeps you top of mind with your entire network. It establishes your thought leadership. Now, let's say that you're not there yet. You haven't done any of those things, or you should have 10 years ago, but you haven't. Now we have to play catch up. You can still create the same type of an association by pushing out those types of things. So once a month, let's say, you can say, I just read a fascinating article on the future of XYZ in this, you know, top medical journal, or wonderful article in such and such association, or Harvard Business Review on the future of X. And then you can link to that, and you can tag them with a hashtag. And again, that's sort of establishing a certain amount of seniority, of expertise, of authenticity. It connects you organically with the things you're truly passionate about and interested in. And I think, I feel very strongly that it reinforces thought leadership. So these things that I'm mentioning, these are just a, you know, smattering of different ideas, but in actuality, they do not take that much time because you already know what you're interested in. So spend a few minutes, exercise number 6, reaching out to the entities and the people that you admire and that you're interested in, and see if you can create one connection, whether it's, hey, I would love to participate. I'm an expert in these 5 things, Jack, and I'd love to participate or be sourced for any future articles you do on X. Just toss it out there and see what happens. You'll be surprised. And you know why is I think that these things generally only happen in networking meetings where it's a friend of a friend, or you're on a board together, or you're on association together, and that's how you got the deal. Well, guess what? These same type of ripple effects happen electronically too by doing what I just mentioned. Hey, pitching you an idea. And if you're the big, you know, CEO of some company that Jack knows about, he's going to say, absolutely, I would love to do that. And you're going to get on the radar for the next thing that he has evolving. All right. So last but not least, for those of you who are putting together your LinkedIn profiles yourself, I will go through a few things that you can do in order to do that. The first thing I'm going to talk about is security settings. So even if we are putting together your LinkedIn profile, listen to this last little bit, and then some of the things on keywords you don't have to listen to if you don't want to, if we're doing your LinkedIn profile. So security settings. Under settings, so if you look at your LinkedIn profile, I'm sorry to do this blindly, but I didn't create a video for this call, but if you are on your LinkedIn profile, you will see your picture in the upper right-hand corner. If you click on that, you can click on your settings. And in the settings, you've got 5 or 6 layers of different things. Under privacy, there's 2 things that I think that you should be particularly interested in. Number 1 is don't let your contacts see your networks. Let me see how it says here. Let me see. Okay, here it is. So in your settings, it has 4 sections at the top: account, privacy, ads, and communications. Under account, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 line items. The first one is how others see your profile and network information. And then it has a subsection to the right that says who can see your connections. You want to have that changed to only you. And the reason why is if you go connect with 10 recruiters, you don't want those recruiters to see, you don't want Korn Ferry to see that you're connected to Boyden, and you probably don't want, in many cases, your company to see that you're connected to 10 different recruiting firms. So I say, who can see your connections? Click on only you. And everything else, you know, you can leave pretty much open. You can leave your profile fairly public so that people outside your network can find you and understand how to contact you. But that basically, that's the first thing. And let me see here if there's something here. Something else here. While you're updating your profile, you might want to click on Activity Broadcasts and turn off the Activity Broadcast notification until you're done updating your profile. Because if you don't, then LinkedIn is going to send a notice to all of your connections saying, hey, John's just updated his profile. Not that that is a big deal or a red flag, because people do go in and update their profile. But if you don't want to deal with all that, then you can just turn that off till you're done updating and then turn it back on. Let's see. Another thing that often comes up with my C-suite clients that is worth noting is many of my clients have heard stories about their companies getting tipped off because all of a sudden they're reaching out and getting third-party testimonials or endorsements, or they're updating their profile. And what I tell my executive clients is this. I have had in my company companies hire me to update their LinkedIn profiles for all of their executives. I've updated LinkedIn profiles for entire departments of Fortune 50 companies. So companies understand that they want their clients, they want their employees' profiles to look a certain way because their branding is a reflection on the company. So one of the things that you can say to anybody that ever inquires is, as part of my performance management, I am making sure that my branding is appropriate, as an appropriate reflection for my company, because I, you know, actively network for my company, I'm a spokesperson for my company, I recruit for my company. I want to make sure that my branding is fluid and in line and optimized for not only myself but for you. And so I go in once a year, and I make sure that I have a couple endorsements. I make sure that everything looks right. It's just part of what, you know, I'm starting to do. I invested in a professional photo on LinkedIn, and that generally is enough for, you know, anybody to understand, because that only behooves them. And you can even turn around and tell your team to do the same thing. I want everybody's LinkedIn profile follow these five basic things, or to look five basic ways, or I want everybody, so it's an accurate reflection on our company, to have a couple endorsements from colleagues or partners or vendors of ours. So if you do that, then it should quell any curiosity or potential red flags that might be there with your company internally. All right, so if we're doing your profile, you can turn this off now. But for those of you that are doing your own profile, I just want to go through quickly a few things that are going to be really important to you in terms of optimizing your profile. So a little while ago, I talked about that 50% of it was who you were networked to. The other 50% is how you are presenting yourself on LinkedIn. So we'll start with the photo. Professional photos are everything. The very first thing that somebody is going to see when they look at my website or they look at a LinkedIn profile is that they're going to see the visual, the pictures. So whatever picture you put there better be in line. So if you are a CEO, you might want to think about not having pictures of mountains, you know, or camping in your background. If you are a CEO, you might want to think about removing the picture, and I don't mean to be on the negative with this, but I see this all the time, of that you cropped out with your wife, your arm around your wife, and you cropped out a circle and stuck it up on LinkedIn as your profile picture. It pays dividends to have a professional photo, small as it is, on your LinkedIn profile as your picture. I prefer a all-white background. It just looks super sharp. But professional photos with good lighting, the right hair, and, you know, makeup if you're a woman, is really, really invaluable. And you can do a black background too, but I find that the white really, really looks professional. So that is something that will pay off for you. I cannot stress that enough. Keywords. The first 50 words in your keyword title tagline are the words that people are going to use to find you. So if think about what somebody is searching for, CFO plus Nova Scotia, or CFO plus Fortune 50 technology companies, or CFO plus SaaS companies. Like, that's what they're going to, and I say plus, I should say, and if they're, you know, recruiters, they often do these Boolean type searches, but that is what will increase your rank.